Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is my returning guest, Zach Fink. He's with New York News One. Is that correct?
New York One News.
And he's going to talk about the Marlin Commission, and then we're going to get to start talking about the state senate. So, you know, the governor dismantled the Marlin Commission a couple of weeks ago, and then he started getting some heat for it, and he said, well, it's my commission, and more or less I can do with whatever I want, so you guys back off. What's your feeling about him dismantling the Marlin Commission?
Well, I think, you know, fundamentally, he's correct. You know, by statute, the governor creates the Marlin Commission. The governor, you know, it goes at his direction. He created it without making any bones about the fact that he would dismantle it once they passed ethics reform. So he formed the Marlin Commission last July, when the legislature broke after the session of 2013 and failed to pass comprehensive ethics reform. Remember, that was the year when there were an awful lot of arrests of public officials, both at the state level and city council in New York City. Legislature leaves, and Cuomo creates the Marlin Commission. The thing about the way he does it, however, is that he appoints very serious people, prosecutors, people with professional reputations, people who are independent, people who don't necessarily want to be used as a political pawn or as a bargaining chip in some kind of budget negotiation. So when he winds up dismantling it, he does so after the budget is passed this year in March, and that's because they passed the bulk of the ethics reform package the governor had been seeking. Not exactly what it was, but more or less what he had wanted. And he said, you know, that is what I said I would do. I will dismantle Marlin. I'll decommission it. And there had been a lot of issues with Marlin. The legislators and their leaders did not like that Marlin was asking about outside income they make, for starters. And they, you know, they all felt it was politically motivated. So he dismantles it, but what happens is the people who he appointed, you know, are saying, well, hang on a second. You know, we started a process here. We were supposed to issue a final report by January 1, 2015. You know, are we just not going to do that report? Does our work just go nowhere? And there's some frustration, and they express it. And then Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, sort of moves in, grabs the files, and says, well, we're going to complete this investigation. And he does a very public scolding of the governor for starting the job and not finishing it. You know, corruption's a serious thing. And if you're going to start looking into the facts about corruption within the state legislature, you better go where the trail leads. You don't abandon it midship. So that's the sort of push and pull of what's been going on with it. You know, I think there's a fair argument to be made on both sides. I mean, ultimately, Marlin can subpoena, but doesn't have prosecutorial authority. So ultimately, Marlin can't really do anything with the information it finds except turn it over to authorities. So what did they wind up doing? They wound up doing that a little bit early, and there was an awful lot of grumbling about that. It's just interesting that the U.S. attorney would go so publicly out against the governor, because that's very unusual.
Now, I had read that the U.S. attorney, that there's all kinds of, you know, questions about why did he do this and so forth. So one speculation is that he is gunning for, the U.S. attorney is gunning for a possible attorney general position if Hillary Clinton is elected. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that directly, but I think, you know, there have been, you know, Preet Bharara has been an active U.S. attorney, much like Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie, both of whom were Republicans, but the same kind of deal. It's a powerful bully pulpit, and he would not be the first politician who had ambitions beyond being U.S. attorney, who had political ambitions. Maybe it's an attorney general in a Democratic administration. I'm not so sure Hillary wins, by the way. But or maybe it's running for office himself. You know, who knows? I mean, I think there's no question that, you know, we haven't seen the last of Pre-Ferraro when this job is over for him. I think we're going to see him reemerge somewhere else.
Now, there has not only has there been drama in the executive branch, there has also been a lot of drama in the legislative branch, in the state Senate, where Jeff Klein asked Michael Janaris if he would take him back. And now I think the meeting was that he asked Janaris to take him back and have him be put in a leadership position. Is that correct?
Well, my understanding of what happened was that there has been a lot of talk within the mainline Democratic conference. There's a handful of senators, particularly Espaillat, Diaz, and others, who've basically said, hey, look, enough is enough. You know, we can't get any of our bills passed. Jeff Klein and Dean Skelos have this coalition. They control the Senate agenda. And, you know, they said, give Jeff whatever he wants and get him back here. We're tired of this. We're tired of being the minority. You know, Jeff Klein is a Democrat. We're Democrats. The reason they're not aligned together, the IDC and the Democrats, is because of a personality conflict between Jeff Klein and Mike Janaris and Andrea Stewart-Cousins. And, you know, there are some Democratic senators who think that's ridiculous. And they kind of have a point. So a meeting was scheduled a couple of weeks ago between Janaris and Klein. We have that pretty solid. And when we got wind of the meeting, it was canceled. So I don't think they want it public yet, although then again, you know, both sides have an agenda to make that known publicly as well. So it's hard to say what's going on. I will tell you with all certainty there was a meeting. It was canceled. I don't know if it's been rescheduled. Mathematically speaking, I don't think there can be a reconciliation prior to the election because there just aren't enough members. I mean, assuming the 24 Democratic members of the Senate were to align with the 5 members of the IDC, that only gets you to 29. There's an open seat, and then there are 2 Democratic senators under indictment, technically are in no conference at all. So you'd have to eliminate at least one of them. And Leroy Comrie, who is a former city councilman in Queens, is now going to run against Malcolm Smith in a Democratic primary. So he could conceivably win that race. So that makes the math a little more attainable. But realistically, a reconciliation is a very long conversation. We're just at the very beginning stages of this. And deal would it be to give Jeff Klein a co-leadership position, but I don't think realistically that could happen until the Senate reconstitutes in January.
Now, do you think that there's going to be a number of primaries? In other words, do you think Coppell is going to primary Klein, and do you think that Klein is going to get somebody to primary Andrea Stewart-Cousins?
I don't know about Andrea Stewart-Cousins. I know, you know, there's a lot of discussion about Coppell launching a primary against Jeff Klein. You know, but I don't think that's a done deal. I think if he were definitely going to do it, we'd know about it for sure. And as of right now, you know, it seems like Coppell is saying to the Democrats, look, I know you want me to run. I know you want me to be a thorn in Jeff's side, but I don't want to lose by, you know, 30 percentage points. And Coppell, while very well known in the Riverdale section of the district, the Western Bronx, is not very well known in the geographically larger eastern section of the Bronx, where Jeff Klein has been building his base of support for 20 years. So unless the Democrats are prepared to spend a lot of money, Coppell is not really going to be a sacrificial lamb here. And the Democrats don't have any money. So it's sort of hard for them to spend a lot of money, especially when they have other primaries they want to focus on.
I think Bill Samuels is in Coppell's corner. Do you I know that there was Andrew Stewart Cousins, there was Liz Krueger, there was Gustavo Rivera. They were all vocal and, you know, adamantly not wanting Klein back. Now, since Gustavo Rivera is more or less in a conservative district, do you think he's being targeted because of his outspokenness against Klein?
Yeah, I think him and Klein have some personal issues. And they don't like each other very much. And, you know, some of that's personal, some of that's professional, some of it's political. But, yeah, it looks like Klein is going to mount a primary against Rivera. And I think Rivera's got a fight on his hands. And I think that's going to be tough. You know, none of these guys ever want to fight a primary where the other candidate is well-known. In this case, you know, Fernando Guerrero is a city councilman. So he's got a base of support. That's always tricky.
Now, I think, you know, he was very outspoken when the DREAM Act failed to pass. And I know that Senator Rivera was furious over that. So do you think that was the beginning of the feud, or has it gone on before that?
No, I mean, that was the very end of the feud. This decision was made a long time ago. This feud
really?
Has been going on for a long time. Yeah, I mean, this feud's been going on for
really?
A long time. I mean, these guys all know each other. You know, they go back a long way. They started out in politics together. So, you know, it's never one issue, and it's very rarely a vote in Albany. It's more often than not something that happened between them in the district or between districts, or, you know, it's usually something out of public view.
Now, since the budget's passed and we're in the final stretch, what do you see happening over the next month and a half?
Well, we understand that there's a renewed effort to try and do campaign finance reform. We'll see if that happens. There may be a small window of opportunity. I don't think the DREAM Act has much of a chance of being revived because there's already been a vote. The votes aren't there. I know for New York City, some of the priorities include speed cameras. This is a very big issue for Mayor de Blasio, and he has a lot of support. We'll see. There hasn't been much activity in April. They haven't really been up in Albany, and there's not going to be a lot in May because you got the two conventions. You got the three conventions, really. You got the Republicans the week of May 14th. You got the Democrats the week after. And then on May 31 is the Working Families Party. So, you know, politics is going to dominate the month of May, and that means legislative businesses not getting done in Albany.
What I found very interesting yesterday when I watched Steve Kornacki on Up with Steve Kornacki, when he was talking about, you know, Cuomo's popularity, and he said that if there was a party candidate, meaning like the Working Family Party, that a lot of his support now would be a lot less if somebody jumps in the race. Now, a few weeks ago, I had seen Howie Hawkins down at the Capitol, and, you know, he was talking about getting the Working Families line. What do you think of... I see Howie Hawkins as being kind of like overlooked and not really covered a lot. Do you think it's possible he could get the line, or do you think they're going to give it to Cuomo?
I don't think Howie Hawkins is really in the running here, but maybe. Who knows? I mean, I think ultimately the Working Families Party is going to give Cuomo the line, but they're going to try and extract concessions from him. But we'll see. Who knows? They may go with someone else. Who is going to have name recognition? to run against Cuomo. You need someone with a name.
And money.
You know, and money. But, I mean, you could get union money, presumably. So, you know, the question is who they need to get 50,000 votes on their line in order to maintain their ballot position. So they may not be willing to risk that. Because if you don't get 50,000 votes, you're no longer a viable party. So
given the fact that Cuomo has taken a lot of positions that are pretty conservative, do you think the Working Family Line will do it just because they want to have that $50,000 threshold? 50,000 vote threshold, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. The unions, at least the leaders of the unions, are with Cuomo. You know, they're not against Cuomo. I mean, the campaign finance reform is a big issue, but, you know, Cuomo, I don't know that Cuomo can deliver that. You know, so they're saying, well, you know, you got to deliver on this issue for us, but, you know, I don't know that Cuomo is capable of doing that. The Working Families Party has to ultimately decide what's best for the Working Families Party. And I guess the question they need to ask themselves, are we so angry and disenchanted with Cuomo over something like campaign finance reform, which may or may not even be his fault, that we're willing to go with another candidate and risk losing our viability as a party? You know, there's an old saying about cutting off your nose to spite your face. Yeah, it would send a message. It would give Cuomo a hard time, but it's not like Cuomo's not going to probably win the election anyway, right? I mean, even his lead may go down.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. But that doesn't mean he's going to lose the election. So that's a very risky thing for the Working Family Party to do.
Now, Terry Finley, yesterday on Steve's program was saying that the base is pretty angry, the base meaning liberals, because they did not have their FDR moment. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I don't want to respond to what they said on Steve's program. I mean, some of it I agree with, some of it I don't. I think the Working Families, this is not about national politics. This is about the work. It doesn't matter what everybody's saying in Washington, D.C. What matters here is what the Working Families Party is going to do for what's best for their party. And, you know, they have a big decision to make. And I don't know which way they're leaning at this point, but I think, you know, most practical people in politics tell you that ultimately they're going to be with Cuomo. They're going to try and get as much as they can from him, but in the end, endorse him.
Well, thank you for your time, and, you know, if something else comes down the pipe before end of session, let's do another interview. So this is Zach Fink, and you've been listening to Focus on Albany. Thank you, and have a great day. Thank you, Zach.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.